Santana will inbound. He gets it over to the doctor. Tie ball game. Here's a shot. Julius. He scores! At the buzzer, and the Nets win 120 to 118.
I think we see Willis coming out.
Here comes Willis.
Carter, over to Kidd. Baseline drive. Kidd throws it up. Oh! How did he do it?
Randle on the drive. Stripped by Butler. Randle gets it back. Randle puts up a three. Bang! Bang! Randle knocks down the three with 0.7 seconds remaining.
With full court press coverage on all of the signings, trades, big games, and everything Knicks, Nets, and across the association, this is Pick and Pod on WFUV Sports.
Welcome, everybody, to the newest episode of WFUV Sports' exclusive NBA podcast, Pick and Pod. I'm Chris Persiainen, and here alongside Owen Kelty and Merrick Rhodes, really excited to get talking about the last week of NBA basketball. Guys, let's get right to it, okay? We've got the playoffs shaping up. The playoff picture is beginning to be drawn. We're starting to see potentially not what the first round matchups will look like, but who might be playing in them. You know, the seeding isn't that exact yet, but the races are starting, and the Philadelphia 76ers were 13-26 in games where they did not have Joel Embiid. That's not optimal, right? You want to tout Tyrese Maxey as next up. You want to tout their depth as enough, but it hasn't been that way. However, last night, 109-105, the final score, Sixers improved to 41-35 against the SGA-less OKC Thunder. A good first game back for Joel Embiid, and you know I've got to send it straight to Merrick here for his take, not just on how Embiid looked in his return, but if you really do think that this is the start of a run at maybe this is the year the Sixers make the conference finals.
You know, it's going to be a little while before I can make that designation, because famously last year with my roommate, I decided that I was done with the Sixers going into the playoffs. I wasn't going to fall for it. And then, you know, James Harden scored 40 points and I was like, hey now. So I'm fully expecting that moment to come again this year. But in terms of how he looked, he definitely looked like he hasn't played since January. He was definitely a little sluggish out there, but he was still doing his Joel Embiid things, hitting his top of the key shots. He had a couple that were going short. I was noticing he was kind of still calibrating his range outside of the paint. But I mean, if there's one thing I know about Joel Embiid, he's gonna get his money at the line. 12 for 12 from the free throw stripe, which is encouraging. And I mean, you know, it's a game without Maxey. Obviously, the Thunder are without Shea and Jalen Williams, so it's not the full strength Thunder, but it's still a win against a very good Thunder team who's sitting at the top of the West. And for morale alone, it's just encouraging. You get your former MVP big man back. He puts up 24 points in 29 minutes, gets a couple boards, gets a couple assists, and the staff around him did enough to get the win against the Thunder. So pure morale, great. Joel looked a little sluggish, but you know that's why he's coming back now, so he's got a couple weeks to ramp up for what's hopefully going to be a playoff run.
I mean, before he got hurt, he was the MVP favorite. It was before he went down with the meniscus injury, they were saying he was going to win the MVP unless he didn't get that 65-game limit. Obviously, he gets surgery, misses the 60 more than the required games. But yeah, he comes back, like you said, gets back to the free throw line. I don't know what happened to the whole NBA is getting more physical after the All-Star break. Embiid's first game back, I'm seeing Chet Holmgren play good defense. Nope, Embiid's going to the line. But I guess that's what you have to deal with when you have a – was he one-time MVP? Or is he two-time?
Reigning.
Reigning MVP. Raining. So now, he's going to get to the line, but for the Sixers team, I mean, what a perfect time for him to come back. He's got seven left now to get back into game playing shape, going to the play-in game most likely. There's still two games back of that sixth seed with the Pacers, who have been hot and cold all season, so you don't know if they'll be able to catch them. Seven games to catch up for two, but even with him coming back, if you're in that play-in game, I think you have to like your odds against a Heat team that's really struggled all year. The Sixers were really good before Embiid got hurt. And then, like you said, right when he got hurt, season kind of fell apart. They were the 2 seed. Now they're the 8 seed. If they have Maxey and Embiid playing and they're both healthy, I don't know any team in the Eastern Conference that wants to see them.
Okay. I get that. I get that Embiid is scary. Nick Nurse has done a really good job this season being who this team needed. And everyone was like, oh, you went from, you know, like the same kind of coach to the same kind of coach in a way. But it's different with Nick Nurse, I think, because of how good he is at managing situations like having a Joel Embiid in and out of the lineup and getting his guys to play hard. That's why the record without Embiid really concerned me. I know there's a mental aspect. It really stinks to have your best player go down in the middle of the year. It's not like they were told before the season, hey, by the way, you know, you're going to go 2.5 months without your best guy. But at a certain point, it's got to click. And basically, I haven't seen it. And that's okay, right? Because it wasn't possible to see it. But this late in the year, if we haven't seen it yet, you better hope that because Buddy Hield's game is so complementary to Stars, that it starts to click. Now, I want to take a look at EPM over at Dunks and Threes. This is a stat, an analytic that basketball front offices use. Like, you know, like OPS was just discovered for them. Like, I can tell you guys that NBA front offices prefer EPM to their in-house analytics, which cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to produce and maintain. There's one player in the 100th percentile of EPM. It's Joel Embiid. And Luka Doncic is obviously first in offense, tied with Jokic. Embiid is third. If you include defense, Embiid is first at a positive 10.4. The next best EPM is 8.6. It's Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. After that, Luka 7.6. Giannis 7.1. Jokic 6.9. Like, Embiid, when he has played this year, the point of this all is to say he's a full head above the rest of the league. The thing is, can he stay on the court? With his physical style of play, will he not get hurt again? These are legitimate worries with him, and it worries me in regards to the 76ers' run at this thing, because it kind of just feels like no one expects them to do anything serious.
Yeah.
And where there's smoke, there's fire, right? Like, if no one is taking them seriously, maybe they won't take themselves seriously. Maybe they'll see themselves as the underdog somehow with the reigning MVP on their team. That's the kind of motivation you need. Maybe Nick Nurse will get it out of them. It certainly worries me that at this stage of the season, we don't know what this 76ers roster playing at its best looks like. I've always said in the past, you need a top 10 guy, you need a top 25 guy. Philly has both. I think Maxey's like top 25, 30. You need a coach that's actually good. They have that. But the fourth thing that both Miami and Denver had last season was years of failure with their core, with their coach, their stars, their depth. Because that's how you learn what to tweak. That's how you learn. The players have it. Nurse is new. Will we see them adapt and be well gelled enough?
I also think it's interesting. You brought up Buddy Hield, and guys like Buddy Hield and Kyle Lowry haven't played a game. I mean, last night, obviously, they played with Joel Embiid, but prior to last night, they had never played a game with Joel Embiid. So there's also that aspect of the guys they added throughout the season while Joel was hurt to try and balance things out. They have to now get used to playing with Joel Embiid, which is a different style of Sixers offense. But I think their schedule is favorable in terms of trying to get to that, to get out of the play-in, get to where the Pacers are, because they're going on the road to Miami, which is obviously a huge game when you're trying to catch up to them, game and a half behind them. Then they go to Memphis, San Antonio, Detroit, Orlando, and then Brooklyn. So there's a lot of very winnable games in there, especially if you have Joel Embiid in any capacity, even if it's on less minutes than he normally plays. But yeah, I think it's going to come down to how they cohesive as a unit, because I've been impressed with what they did in the offseason, and I feel like they actually added a lot of quality depth on the team, and I think they did it throughout the season as well, bringing Buddy Hield in. I just think it's time to see if that was truly the issue or if there are some other issues. But I think them getting in as a lower seed is not the worst thing in the world because of the sheer pressure they've had over the past couple of years and the second round exit issues that everybody talks about. And if you go in as a low seed, people, like you said, might not be thinking about the Sixers, this and that. So it might favor them in terms of relieving some of the pressure, but it also adds on the aspect that you have to go on the road.
Owen, what do you think about Embiid's supporting cast? Obviously led by Maxey, but the best players on it, D'Anthony Melton, Paul Reed, obviously Kelly Oubre and Buddy Hield having really nice tenures with the Sixers. Oubre has been a really positive surprise, and yet his offensive EPM is the 54th percentile. It's actually a negative 1.1. D'Anthony Melton, a positive 0.3 on the offensive end of the floor. Like, obviously, this stat isn't the Bible, but I do think that there's something to... We've yet to see these guys click on their own. Now you're counting on the hope that they'll click around Embiid.
I mean, also, though, when you look at how teams have been defending them for this entire stretch that Embiid's gone out, now you bring back Embiid, who is going to be doubled almost every possession. He's going to be blitzed every time he has the ball. And that opens up more scoring opportunities for Buddy Hield, who's a good three-point shooter. A lot of the games I've been watching of the Sixers, like, Buddy Hield's not going to get as many open shots, or will get more open shots now that Embiid's back. And even when Embiid was out, Maxey's been in and out of the lineup all year. So you really haven't gotten this lineup, even without Embiid, a chance to form and flow together because Maxey's been in and out of the lineup. So now Buddy Hield and Kelly Oubre can move more towards their normal role of being a third or fourth option instead of games where Maxey's out. They're having to be the one and two option. And obviously when you look at how they have Kyle Lowry, he's going to be coming off the bench. And that's just a good guard to be coming off the bench. So I think when you look at their depth, it's not the best in the Eastern Conference, but I think they have enough where they can contend with any team but the Celtics. Everyone is looking at the Celtics, obviously. It's the clear-cut favorite in the East, but you look at the Bucks since they've gotten Doc Rivers, haven't been great. The Pacers, the Magic, super young teams, inexperienced. Knicks super injured. Cavs also injured. So the last year the Heat were the A seed, they made a run to the finals. I think you can look at the same thing with the Sixers. If they can get that 7 or 6 seed, I think they could maybe make the Eastern Conference Finals and get out of the second round as long as they avoid the Boston Celtics. But I think they have the depth that they can take on really any team except for the Celtics, obviously.
Yeah, it's tough in the East, and where it seems to be even tougher is out in the West. I mean, you take a look at the Eastern Conference standings in the NBA, and if you're not a top 10 seed, you're really bad. Like, the Nets, the Raptors, the Hornets, the Wizards, and the Pistons are
atrocious teams.
There's no shot of anything productive going on. I don't think anyone thinks the 9 or the 10 seed, the Bulls or the Hawks, have a shot at anything. I do think people think that any of these top 8 teams could make a run. I don't believe in the Pacers. I don't believe in the Magic. I don't believe in the Cavaliers. But that's still 5 teams, right? In the West, the standings trail off doesn't happen until the 9-game gap from the 11th-seeded Rockets to the 12th-seeded Jazz. Any team from 1 to 11 could make some noise in the first round. That is fun. Objectively, really fun. Like, if the Lakers get the 7th seed, you're telling me that they couldn't, like, give the Timberwolves, like, a 5-6 game series? Like, this is just, it's really fun. And what we saw last night was a little bit of Ghost of Christmas Present versus Ghost of Christmas Future. You had the Denver Nuggets taking on the 18-57 San Antonio Spurs, one of those bottomed out teams. They only won by 5 points, okay? Because it took Nikola Jokic going 18 of 32 from the freaking floor, 16 rebounds and 6 assists with 42 points and 2 blocks. And it only helped his team win by 5 points. That guy, Victor Wembanyama, 23 points, 15 rebounds, 8 assists, 9 rejections. What the hell?
Almost a quadruple.
Like, actually, what the hell? Right? So he goes 9 of 29 from the floor, 2 of 11 from 3. You think if he just hit at his average from downtown, the Spurs might have sent it to overtime or won. Owen, what's your reaction when you see a game like this? Obviously, no one's taking the Spurs seriously for the rest of the season, but, you know, this is something that feels like a marquee matchup in both cities that will be sold out before the season even starts for the next 3 years.
I mean, it's just insane watching Victor Wembanyama play. If you look at the Knicks game where he had 40 points and willed them to victory, and then now going against the reigning champ, Denver Nuggets, and Nikola Jokic, who is the best player in basketball, and he had nine blocks, I think, is just one of the most absurd things I've seen on, like, a stat line. I don't know if it's, like, the Wemby account that posts, like, stat lines that have never been done before, but every single game he plays, and he's a rookie. Like, this, you have to imagine that this is the worst he'll probably ever be, and the roster around him also is not that great, and he's, most games that that I've watched, at least, they feel sort of competitive when Victor's playing, but 23 points, 15 rebounds, and 9 blocks is just almost a triple-double, not adding an assist. Eight assists, too, is insane, but like you said, these two going against each other probably for the next decade, more for Victor, it's just going to be an incredible matchup to watch, especially if the Spurs keep building around Victor and they have a competitive team in the next 2 to 3 years. This could be the two teams that run the West for the next 10 years, as you saw with the Warriors. I mean, Victor is that good of a player that I know the 18-58 record is really bad, but it's just incredible to watch every game a guy that's big be able to do everything he does, the step back threes. I mean, that's just insane.
Yeah, I feel like there were a lot of doubts coming out of the draft in terms of some people questioning whether he'd be able to translate, and I think this year he's just proven that's totally not an issue, and he's able to translate very easily. And one of the things I've been most impressed by is his ability to show up in big moments. Obviously, the record, there's not many big moments for an 18-58 team, but some of the matchups he's had in terms of Jokic, both times he's played Jokic, he's put up a respectable stat line. Last time it was 22 points, 11 rebounds, 6 steals, and 4 blocks. So he got
also
more
doing it in limited minutes.
Yeah, and I mean, Anthony Davis, he scored 30 points to Anthony Davis's 37, 27 to Giannis's 44. Joel put up 70, he put up 33. Like he's just been battling, and the Brunson game where Brunson put up 61, he went for 40 and 20. Like, he's just been, I feel like every time he's been in the primetime setting and going up against these NBA stars, he's really met the hype. And I mean, in the last three games he's played, he's averaging 31 points a game, 14.7 rebounds per game, 6 assists per game, 4 blocks per game, and 2 steals per game, which is just, that's like 2K stuff. Yeah. when you get to your final form, it's just insane.
My player build a 7'3" that can shoot and do everything.
Yeah,
on the court.
Literally. And you were saying this matchup is going to be sold out for years to come. The two of them in this matchup, Jokic has 37-11-6. Wembanyama 20-11-5. These two are going to be going at it for sure for years to come, and are without a doubt two of the best big men in the league. And I've been really impressed with Wembanyama this year.
I don't want to like get clipped here, you know what I mean? But like, if he was a top five player next season, would anyone like honestly be too surprised? Like,
I don't think
after
so.
This year, I feel like,
dude.
No.
Like, oh my God, this is stupid. It's like how you had, Shaq being like, oh, Bol Bol can do anything Wemby can do. You know, you take a look at Bol Bol. He's got the height. He's got the ability to, you know, he could handle the ball. He's, you know, centers in my day when I played, you know, I dominated in the paint. But it's like, dude, the Cavaliers were saying they have players better than LeBron. It's like, yo, you have the first pick for a reason. Like, there's always this mentality that, oh, we have to, right? Like Cheryl Swoops being like, oh, Caitlin and Angel won't be that good when they first get to the WNBA. Like, no, actually, Caitlin would probably be a top 30 player from the second she steps foot on the court. I just, dude, he's so good. And the fact that he's good in a way where, yes, he can dominate down low, but he can also get the ball on the right wing, cross someone up, and hit a step back three. What that does to me is more so than the highlights, creates the threat of, oh my God, there's a center on the perimeter and I need to close out like hard.
He's like a,
and
how do you free close safety out on defense. It's just you sit in the paint and go guard anywhere on the court.
So when he's on the wing and he starts driving, you're scared of the step back, but because he can see over everyone, like imagine if Justin Herbert was 4 inches taller. Like, he can see over the defense. And he'll just whip it, like actually just palm the ball and whip it to the opposite corner. and then it's an open three for Devin Vassell, and you're like, how the hell is this allowed, right? Like, it's almost unimaginable on a game-to-game basis. This is just the reality now, right? Like, look at Chet. Look at Wemby. These guys can put the ball on the floor. These guys can shoot. These guys can protect the rim. The age of Kristaps Porzingis being the league's only elite stretch five, yeah. Miles Turner being good, guys like that being good, Kristaps being the only great one. Like, I think Wemby could be better than Kristaps today, like right now. So
I think if you told the Celtics they could have Victor Porzingis, yeah. I think they're taking Victor for this playoff run.
Exactly. So it's like,
that'd be scary.
Man, yeah. how do you prepare for this? How do you, as a team, game plan? Like, you watch the Knicks play the Spurs, right? And you notice Brunson didn't take a floater the whole time Wemby was in. The second Wemby goes to the bench, Brunson's like spamming floaters.
Even a mid-range, he was barely able to get off those, yeah. like mid-ranges he takes by the free throw line. Victor's there, he can reach it. It's like hard to even get those off.
You have to get Victor to commit to the drive and then step back and hit a fading three. It's like the only way for someone Brunson size to succeed. It's terrifying, and I think the Spurs will probably be in this kind of playoff conversation a year from today. Oh, they're fighting for the play-in. Oh, they're actually, I think they're safe in the sixth seed. You know, like, this is where we're at. And unless you guys have anything else you want to say about the Wemster, I think we should go a little higher in the standings from the Spurs. Talk about the Houston Rockets being the hottest team in basketball, Jalen Green having the craziest Mickey Mouse march of anyone.
His family to feed Jalen Green.
Averaging like 29 points a game. Houston rips off 10 straight. Now they've lost 2 straight, so they're only 8-2 in their last 10. But that was enough for the Warriors to wake up. Draymond Green, I don't give a damn about Houston. I'm not following the Rockets. I don't care about the Rockets. They have a 5-game win streak of their own, and now they're like 3 games ahead of the Rockets. Yeah. First of all, in one word, who makes the play-in? Warriors or Rockets?
Warriors.
Or Rockets? Okay, I'm there too. I think Steph will step this up. I also have to put my hand up and acknowledge that I had the Warriors as the 1 seed this year. And I was so terribly wrong.
Only 11 and a half games off.
I was like, yo, this Draymond thing? Because I had heard reports that, like, even Iguodala, who's like in the, like, a front office role now, was really upset with Draymond for the Jordan Poole thing. That Draymond went to Steph, Clay, and Iggy and was like, guys, I need you to get the locker room back behind me after this Poole incident. And they all were like, who are you again? Like, you can prove to us you deserve to be on this team.
Yeah.
Now, is Draymond a better player today than Clay is? Yes. Is he a better player than Wiggins is? Yes. Kuminga, Ooh. Easily.
Think Draymond's better than Kuminga?
Draymond's really good.
Still?
Draymond is still really good. And if you take a look at just assists in the final 4 minutes of games, he's in the top 10 in the league. Because what he can do is make the right read. And he's out there on the court because of his defense, not because he's a shooter. So if you have a guy who's out there for defense, who's at atop the league in clutch time assists, like, that's still a really good ball player. The problem, what the heck do they do when they go up against a team like the Pelicans, where Zion just doesn't care about Draymond's defense? He's just knocking old man over and yamming it down. Zion's looking like Duke Zion again. You got the Sacramento Kings. There was a play earlier today. Let me just tell you guys. So they were playing. The Kings just played the Clippers, okay? And with 4 minutes left in the first quarter, in one play, there was a pass to the wing, a UCLA cut from the passer, then a high post entry to Sabonis, a Spanoulis action, which, if you don't know what that is, Vasilis Spanoulis is a Greek coach, and the Spurs have been taking his play. It's an offensive action where a guard or wing cuts from under the rim towards the top of the key for a handoff, like a reverse cut pretty much that reverses the defense, and then a second side zoom cut. And this was all in one play. Like, Mike Brown is, like, there's smoke and fire coming out of his pot. Like, this guy is cooking. And it's not even the historic offense they ran last year. This is, like, a simplified version of it. I'm scared of Sacramento in the first round. I'm scared of the Clippers. I'm scared of the Lakers. I'm scared of the Warriors. I'm scared of the Nuggets. The West is packed. how did the Warriors get past these teams despite having the best point guard in the league, one of the best defenders in the league, one of the most improved players in Kuminga, one of the greatest shooters of all time in Klay? You can talk about any of these top 11 Western teams like this, gassing them up like this, because they're that good. Do the Warriors have an actual chance this year?
I don't even think the Warriors make it out of the play-in.
Yeah, I was going to say that. Like,
you think they're making it out of the play-in? They'll be playing the Lakers, most likely, the first round. And that's LeBron. LeBron's locked in right now.
That's a dub for Golden State.
All right, so even if they beat the Warriors, you think they're beating either the Kings or the Suns? Most likely, I would say they'll be playing the Kings. I think the Suns end up beating the Kings in that first play-in round. I don't see them winning two in a row against those quality of teams and getting out of the play-in. And even if they did, by a miracle, get out of the play-in, they're getting swept by the Nuggets. I see no chance where the Warriors even can make a run through the play-in and through the playoffs. The Lakers, on the other hand, I do think they could have a chance. I've seen a lot of Lakers fans on Twitter. They want to play the Nuggets in the first round because they believe that's the only team that can beat them in the playoffs, so they'd rather get it over with, which is similarly how I view the Knicks playing the Celtics. I'd rather just get it over with right away than have to like drag it out. But if you're a Lakers or Warriors fan, I don't know if you could be that positive going to this playoffs. I just don't see them making it out of the play-in tournament.
Yeah, I would honestly love to see the Lakers beat the Nuggets just for that reason, just to put the pressure on them even more. Mm. But I kind of agree with what you're saying. I think it's definitely basically the definition of an uphill battle when you look at all the teams up ahead of the Warriors, because you, like you said, you got to go through the Lakers, and then once you get through the Lakers, you got to go through either Kevin Durant and the Suns or Sabonis and the Kings. So it's definitely going to be an uphill battle. But I mean, you know, like you said, they have Steph Curry, and Steph Curry, we all know who he is, but it's really who else can step up around him. I feel like it's going to be tough for them to go up against a team like the Nuggets, who have so many ways to attack you. Obviously, the Warriors have a lot of ways to attack you, but it's a much older core than a lot of these teams ahead of them, like the Timberwolves or the Thunder even. It's just definitely going to be an uphill battle for the Warriors, and it all starts in the play-in.
I think they beat the Lakers. I think they beat the Kings. That's just where I'm at. Malik Monk, yo.
He's out. Yeah. And so is Kevin Huerter. Huerter?
Huerter? What is it, Mexican? What
are we? I don't know. Right. I don't know. I can't say his name.
All right, man. Listen. Basically, you take a look at those two losses for the Kings. It's less about how good Huerter is, decent, how good Monk is, sixth man of the year, and more about who they now have to play instead. Davion Mitchell is a bulldog. That's Pat Bev in training, right? But the thing is that he's not really good. Like, I don't know how
tough way to put it.
So when you take a look at his EPM, offensively, he's a minus 2.5. That's the 29th percentile in the NBA. Not great, coach. Now, his calling card, defense. Naturally, he's... No, 22nd percentile. It's actually worse. It's worse. So for Davion, this has not been the year for him. The 9th overall pick in 2021. I mean, some front office executive or the owner of the team probably fell in love with him and was like, I don't care who's
coming off the national championship too.
The hype was there. The production, like, I didn't have Davion in my top 20 that year. I didn't think that meant he was bad. I just thought that was ridiculous. And you take a look at the guy. I mean, we don't have to like totally redux this and clown the Kings, but if we just take a second and indulge, right? Zaire Williams and James Bouknight and Josh Primo and Chris Duarte were the next four picks, okay? I'm not saying that they like totally but dude, Trey Murphy went 17. Every Kings fan I know complains about Harry B on a nightly basis. They could have Trey Murphy starting for them. You know who went at 20? Jalen Johnson. How about that for a compliment to Sabonis? How about Quentin Grimes going at 25? De'Aaron Fox and him are friends. What are they doing? Why would they? Cam Thomas, okay? Like,
I mean, they still did have Tyrese Haliburton, though, at that point, so they did have Fox and Haliburton.
So then take Sengun.
That's true.
Who went at 16. And you never have to trade for Sabonis. What was the thought process taking someone my height at 9 overall? You know who went at 35? Herb Jones. You know who went at 36? Say it. Owen?
Deuce McBride.
Ka-ching. So when you're taking a look at these compliments they could have had. It makes no sense. And now you're stuck with this guy in, like,
the biggest point.
Darn near yeah. starter minutes. It's not what you want. And when you take a look at the Kings, I'm going to go to EPM for y'all because I think this is a good starting point. They have three really good players. De'Aaron Fox is 95th percentile. Domantas Sabonis is 91st percentile. Big dog Keegan Murray, 84th percentile. Keon Ellis, because of his really good defensive EPM, is 78th percentile. Herter, negative. Monk, negative. Len, negative. Shocker. Barnes, negative. Lyles, negative. Vezinkov, negative. Duarte, really negative. McGee, worse. Davion Mitchell, worse. Kessler Edwards, Juan Toscano-Anderson, worse. Colby Jones, no one expects the rookie to be good. He's actually 6th percentile in the league in EPM. That's really bad. This isn't a team that's actually deep. And now you take out Herter and Monk. Fox, Sabonis, Murray, Ellis, Len, Barnes, Lyles, Vezinkov, Duarte. I'm not taking them serious, dude. You couldn't pay me to take them serious.
But in a one-game playoff against the Warriors, you don't think Sabonis and Fox can just pull them out,
dude,
and get them past?
Draymond Green is going to get Sabonis so mad and ejected
yeah.
by the
second. Well, he did. Last year they played each other, and that's when he stepped on his
yeah.
chest.
Stomped on
yeah.
him.
Yeah. Curb stomped him on the middle
dude,
of the, in the paint.
Ridiculous. But, like, bro, they have a huge rivalry, and they have the Warriors have the best player.
The Warriors' depth, though, isn't great either.
Kuminga presents, like, your Keegan parallel.
Yeah.
And then they have the extra guy. Steph, Clay, Dre, Fox, Domas. The three's more than two. I'm going with the Warriors, and the Lakers are a clown show. I mean, I just don't. LeBron does this thing in big games, and you notice it against the Nuggets last year, where he has this complete inability to pace himself.
Oh, he gets gassed in the first half.
He's the best player you've ever seen in your lifetime from the first quarter to the end of the third. And he comes out in the fourth, and he's got the, like, you know what, threes go in, and the passing is there. And then he's got to, like, rotate on defense, and you'll see him be like, hey, Cam Reddish, that's your fault somehow.
Hey, he's 39. You gotta give him a break on that one.
But then why? But then I'll give him a break as long as you don't make me take his team seriously.
That's true.
So that's my point, is, like, look at this season. LeBron had to make the zero dark 30 Bron mode push, right? The zero dark 30 comes out, and he's putting up 40. He makes 9 of 10 threes against the Brooklyn Nets, the worst team right now defensively in the whole NBA. You couldn't pay me to take the Lakers seriously in the playoffs this year. If they make it to the first round, they're getting swept. Right? You had them.
Oh, yeah. I don't have them winning a round. I think they beat the Warriors, though.
No. No. That's the thing. The Warriors could put up a fight in the first round, losing six. The Lakers got swept by the Nuggets last year. They would get – it's not happening. They're not even going to make it. I'm not in. The Rockets are really fun. They're a team who I think weaponized their cap space intelligently. Dylan Brooks, nice signing. That was a Moneyball signing, okay? The Grizzlies were like, we don't want Brooks back under any circumstances. Well, surely they're a respectable team this year. Oh, wait. Even with Morant on the court, the highlight of the year was him dunking on Wemby in a game they lost. I can't.
It was a cool dunk.
Sick dunk.
25 and 50, the dunk makes up for it.
The highlights of the Grizzlies season are the almost dunks that Morant almost
yeah,
made
literally
in the 30 games he played. I can't. He didn't even play 30 games, by the way. That was me being nice.
10 maybe?
It was like 18, yeah. I think they're a joke. And the NBA media, like, legitimately fell over backwards trying to just understand how well set up for the future the Grizzlies were, how they're going to run the league. Jaren Jackson Jr. still can't play full-time center because he's built like Owen Kelty. Brandon Clark
fouls out constantly. I play better defense than him.
Brandon Clark can't shoot the basketball because he ruined his shot after his third season of his career. Some assistant coach, like, changed it, and now that didn't exist.
That Markelle Fultz
That Keith Smart, well, Nick's assistant, who just, like, was the shot doctor and made everyone worse at shooting. Hey, man, they're not good. They're not scaring me. The team in the top three of that draft that year that has done the worst with their pick was the Grizzlies. It's like the Jaguars. You didn't even have to trade up for Trevor Lawrence, and you still stink. He's got him on a rookie deal. The Grizzlies got Morant handed to them at two when they shouldn't have jumped that high in the lottery odds, and they still stink. Zaire Williams, they traded up from 17 to 10 to get Zaire Williams. You know who went with their 17th pick? A better player in Trey Murphy, who does the same thing Zaire is supposed to do, except he's better at it. Zaire was supposed to be this creating wing, the Jalen Williams to Ja Morant, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. He's more like the Kenrich Williams to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander.
Crazy stray for Kenrich Williams.
I respect to K-Dog. I just think that the West is like, they've grown out of the Grizzlies, and that's my quick rant on that. Let's come back to Earth. Go to the Eastern Conference and talk about a New York-based basketball team in the Knickerbockers. They've dropped three straight. A loss to Victor Wembanyama, a career-high 40 points, 20 rebounds, 7 assists. Jalen Brunson, 61 points, did not matter. They play the Oklahoma City Thunder, and with 1.8 seconds left on the clock, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander said, "Hey, I know I had a really bad game, but watch this." There was that. And now, last time out, which I watched on the Jumbotron of Citi Field, waiting for the Mets game that never happened, a loss to the Miami Heat.
Talk about a horrible combo. Sitting in the rain at Citi Field and then watching the Knicks lose.
To me, last night was like the loudest sign ever that the Knicks just need one of Randle or Ananobi back. Now, I'm someone who's on the Knicks beat, allegedly. And I have no idea what either of those guys are up to. Like, I don't know what Randle, like, I had a bunch of, I posted a clip of him working out, and everyone was like, I got like dozens of replies like, "I'm sick of the workout videos. I just want to see him on the court." I'm like, "I'm so sorry for doing my job.
My bad.
I'll actually go up to him right now and be like, "Hey, NickFan_10473 says you're soft. Any reply?" You know, like, what do you want me to do? Anyway, if Randle's not back, Ananobi kind of has to be. Maybe he knows he's going to play through the pain in the playoffs and is just trying to wait it out right now. But they're not reporting anything about it. Knicks fans have no idea what's going on. And then Josh Hart says,
and they're losing now too.
It's, "Hey, I'm not part of the medical team, but you know, I think the mindset is we're not getting either back. We got to just be enough with what we have." I love that mindset. Is it enough? Is the power of friendship enough to get the New York Knicks past the second round?
No, the power of friendship, I don't even know. I guess, yeah, it would get them through the first round. I think they can beat the Magic. They could beat
them. Shaq said today the Magic.
I saw he said
sweep.
They'd sweep the Knicks. Knicks without Ananobi and Randle probably beat the Magic in five.
If you showed Shaq a photo of Jalen Suggs with the jersey edited off of him and
he
just like
no
a
idea.
Blank white jersey, he would
no
know
idea.
Who it is.
The one Magic game I bet he watched this year was the one where they retired his jersey. And I don't even know if he probably watched
probably
that game.
Probably didn't even watch that
whole
game.
Probably sat on his phone the entire time.
Real.
But I don't know. The Knicks, I agree with you. I think they just need one of them to come back, and I don't think it's going to be Randle. It's been so long now at this point. I know he's rehabbing every single day. I think the most frustrating point about the Ananobi injury is that he came back. He got hurt in the first game back. He was clearly, obviously, like, hurt. He was, like, running around the court, like, screaming in pain. And then he played the, what, next two games after that or next game after that? And then he's back out again with injury management. And now it's another, they changed the report on it. But if Randle had Ananobi's injury, 100% Julius Randle is playing right now. So that's, like, the biggest thing for me is that, is the injury like Ananobi's just sitting out because he doesn't want to play through? There was the report that he refuses to play through pain, or is it like you said, he's waiting to maybe come back just for the playoffs to see if the pain goes away, and they're just hoping the guys that they have right now, like Josh Hart said, can keep them in that fifth or fourth seed. But these last three losses have just been horrible to watch. I mean, they've been really fun to watch because Jalen Brunson scored 61 points, which is amazing, but losing that game in overtime. And the combination of the two guys being hurt and having no idea if or when they're coming back, Jalen Brunson's been playing out of his mind, and then the refs having each game, there's controversial calls. I think that's what's made it most frustrating. And then Shai Gilgeous-Alexander and Jalen Williams missed like two games before the next game, come back for the next game, miss the next game. What's going on there? I don't know. Pretty frustrating to watch, but I think the Knicks can get through that first round versus the Magic, but I think if they're the 4-5 seed, they'd play Boston most likely in that second round. And if they don't get Ananobi or Randle back, they have no chance.
Yeah, it's not. It's definitely not a good time in the season to kind of have this losing streak pop up, especially when there's the injuries. But yeah, I was trying to do some research to try and figure out what the deal was with these guys, and I just kind of kept finding myself nothing. Like getting halfway through an article and being like, "This is giving me absolutely
no
nothing."
No one has any idea what's going on.
Other than like Thibodeau being like, isn't yet confident enough in his injured shoulder while expressing hope that the All-Star will play soon.
And then he goes on to say that, oh yeah, we're basically prepared. If they come back, it's like not a miracle, but it's like we're preparing for them not to be back. It'd be a surprise if they come back. And then he's like, but they could be back tomorrow.
But I'm feeling pretty good. Yeah, I mean, it's a tough time for things to kind of be going haywire, but you have the last seven games. You have three against the Bulls down the stretch, which is nice, and you got the Nets in there as well. Bucks, Kings, Celtics, figure those games out as you go. But if they could stack some wins, I think they'll be in a good spot going into the playoffs. I think you really hope to have one of the two of them back. But worst comes to worst, if you can just win the games you're supposed to win against the Bulls and against the Nets, and maybe pick up a win against the Kings, who we all know how Chris feels about the Kings, I think you could be in a decent spot. And I think as long as you can try and fight for that home court and surpass the Magic and play them in the first round with the Garden being the home venue for the majority of the games, you're in a good spot. And it's really just all about not falling behind the Pacers, but I really don't think that's a concern given the way the Pacers have been in their own right. So I don't think it's the worst situation in the world. Obviously, you hope that you don't go into the playoffs with two of your key players out. But overall, I think that they'll have no issue getting to the second round.
I really do think that like the Cavs are falling apart. I really do think that the Magic are the 2021 Knicks. Amazing regular season story. Will get keyed in on in the playoffs. Maybe we'll score 100
carried
points.
Carried by a power forward.
Who doesn't defend. Yeah. Maybe scores 100 points one time. Like that's how I see the Magic this year. They're ahead of schedule because Franz Wagner is really, really good.
Unbelievable.
So like, that's cool for them, right? You don't have to lie about it. You don't have to be like, oh, I was wrong about the Magic. They're actually going to be really... It's okay to stick to your evaluation so long as you adjust with context. I was wrong about the Magic this year. I thought they would finish as like an eighth seed, and I thought that would be good for them.
Oh, yeah, after last year, the eighth seed would have been amazing for them. Even being seventh or eighth, I think you would have.
That doesn't mean we have to lie now and be like, oh, they're actually this huge playoff threat. Like,
yeah.
The Pacers aren't good. Siakam is really good at basketball. Statement number one. Statement number two, he's much better at basketball than Buddy Hield. Statement number three, trading Hield for Siakam without getting a shooter back completely screwed their spacing, evidenced by Halliburton's 3-point percentage tanking. I know he got hurt. Obi Toppin was shooting 85% at the rim before the Siakam trade. Now he's like down to 70%. That's evidence that the spacing isn't there. And so for a team that's 43-33, for a Pacers team that's 20-18 on the road, they can't really take their show on the road. I'm not sold on them beating a Knicks or a Cavaliers or a Bucks or a Celtics or a 76ers or a Heat in the playoffs. I think the Pacers have no shot of making it past the second round. I don't think they make it
past. You think they beat the Cavs in the first round?
No, I think Cleveland wins.
Yeah.
So, like, exactly, right?
They're not getting out of the first round.
I just think it's tough to say that any team in the Eastern Conference besides Boston, Milwaukee, New York, Miami, or Philly is going to be in the Eastern Conference Finals. That's just where I'm at. No one's good enough. The Cavs are falling apart. I think Mitchell wants out already. And I think he's willing to stay. But
when you
look at Dan Gilbert saying, we're confident he's going to resign, and then they ask Donovan about it, he's like, I never said that. Dude.
Great sign.
I mean, he never wanted to go to Cleveland in the first place.
And everyone knew it.
Yeah, it was so obvious when they gave up all that. I was like, well, he's not re-signing.
What they did was they bet on Evan Mobley not being 2 years and 25 pounds away from being an all-star, and that's exactly where he was. So, like, maybe next year Mobley puts on, like, 8 pounds of muscle in the offseason, has a little growth horizontally, you know, and he plays at that all-star caliber level where he's not yet recognized with the award, but just like
close enough.
He has not taken
that leap that everyone, I feel like, thought he would.
Jalen Williams took the leap with one less year in the league.
Yeah, I mean, Evan Mobley, and through his rookie year, everyone thought, oh, next year he's going to become like a star, and that's why they made that trade, and he just hasn't made that leap.
I said last season he was 2 years and 25 pounds away, maybe 20 pounds away. Now we're a year and 18 pounds away. Like, I just
we're getting there.
It's not there. Miami, Philly, worry me with Embiid back, with Jimmy giving a darn.
And Terry Rozier just decided last night.
DeLon Wright is really good, and Terry Rozier was an amazingly good pickup for them. But overall, the Heat are not beating the Celtics. They're a league above them. So, like, what are we doing here talking about the Orlando Magic, talking about the Indiana Pacers? Like, these are teams the Knicks should not worry about. The Knicks are in that top five Eastern teams without Ananobi and Randle because they have Jalen Brunson, who's the second best point guard in the NBA. And anyone who put Halliburton in talks with him was a clown when they did it. They definitely are now. Anyone who put Maxey in talks with him was a clown when they did it and definitely is now. I just think that when you take a look at the Knicks, they're built for this. The thing is, they weren't built to be losing two of their three best players. So
who the entire roster is built around.
Well,
and most of the players coming off the bench are built to come off the bench, like Josh Hart and Precious Achiuwa. Even Bogdanovich is not, like, he's not playing his role right now, like what he's supposed to be. He was good last night, but like through his whole thing, he's not really played his role.
I think that when you take a look at the Knicks, they're a team that like can fight anyone, but might come out bloodied no matter what, and then not be able to win that next round. We'll see how that goes. We'll keep you in touch here on Pick and Pod, WFUV Sports' exclusive NBA podcast. And it was just a pleasure to be joined this week by Merrick Rhodes and Owen Kelce. For those two clowns themselves, I'm Chris Persiainen, and signing off saying thanks so much for listening. And to stay tuned to the WFUV Sports social channels, where we've got you covered on all things Knicks, Nets, and around the association.